Well, hello everyone and welcome back. Compliments of the season. Merry Christmas to you all. And as my grandmother used to say, every Christmas day, Christmas gift. Certainly an old tradition from her childhood. And I extend the spirit and the warmth of that greeting to you. How are you, everyone? I hope that you are all well. Certainly, this is sort of the countdown to the holiday. And of course, I know many of you are very, very busy. Some of you may not even hear this podcast, perhaps for several days, but this is a great time of the year. And I hope that you're well and enjoying it with your family, with your loved ones. Embrace the family, create memories, and also give thanks for those Christmas joys. We are now entering a new celebration, by the way, and this time next week, I'll be talking about that a little bit more in depth because as sesquicentennial celebrations continue over this five-year period as individuals who are Civil War enthusiasts began, I also urge those who research ancestors of African ancestry, let us remember to pause and perhaps participate in the watch night services that are going to be coming up next weekend and appreciate their origins. We are at the eve of our own celebration of freedom. Many of you know that the Emancipation Proclamation, the actual document signed by President Abraham Lincoln, will be on display for 36 hours next weekend. And I hope that many of you will take some time to go and take a look and see this rare, precious document. Apart from all of the, yes, we know the historical facts, the document itself and the issuing of the document itself did not literally free individuals, but particularly during the time in which it was written, many individuals had freed themselves already. But this symbolizes the very spirit and the very document that finally addressed the status of individuals who had been enslaved, enslaved legally, a heinous system, sort of I guess, America's original sin, so to speak. But you know what? This is the time, and we are on the eve of the celebration of our own freedom. So a lot of things to be aware of, a lot of things to participate in as we enter this season, which is a festive one. I also do want to encourage you and take a moment of pause and reflection. As happy and as joyous as this occasion is and as this season is, let us take time to remember who we are and where we are and where we are in time in this country. This country, in spite of the joys of the season, we're also a country that is in mourning. We must remember that there are 20 children who will not be celebrating Christmas with their families, and there are 26 families that certainly were devastated by the tragedy that took place a week ago today in Connecticut. Let us keep those families, those individuals in our prayers. We as a nation have all been affected by this, and let us never forget this kind of tragedy. And let us be cognizant of the fact that individuals die by violence every day in this country. So regardless of what your perspective is politically, I don't really care what it may be politically, but I can't imagine that any of us were certainly unmoved by that terrible tragedy that took place a week ago today. So let us say in our prayers, certainly that some peace and solace with time will come to the families of those children and of those adults who also died by a terrible act of violence. And it is even more painful. There's no season in which it's good to experience such a tragedy, but even more painful because not only are the families of those who died affected, but the survivors who are also so, so touched. Let us keep them in our prayers and hope that eventually the spirit of this season, the spirit of Christmas, and just a spirit of love and compassion will embrace all of us. Anyway, I just had to say that today. But moving on, things are taking place in the genealogy community. One of the most amazing pieces of news, not amazing, but I'll just say good pieces of news that was shared over the last week or so, came out of Claassen Press. And this is a press that publishes any number of publications by writers, researchers, genealogists about their work. Well, I was excited to see, I believe I saw it, that was shared with me on Facebook, an interesting series of publications. For those of you who have ties to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, then you're probably familiar with the Pittsburgh Courier. Well, there is a series of 8 books. That's right, 8 books of deaths that have been abstracted from this publication, covering a period of, I would say certainly 20 plus years. And the series is called Early African American Deaths from the Pittsburgh Courier. They were all compiled by Marlene Garrett Bransom. And as I said, there are 8 volumes in this set. And this is not some small little thin booklet. We're talking about 8.5 by 11 and in size or dimension, and we are talking about books that are typically 150, 170, 200, 220. We're talking about a good number of pages per volume, and there are 8. Did I say that there are 8? There are. Well, first of all, I would simply say that don't think that just because you may not be from Pittsburgh that you may not have an interest in the publication. Frankly, I think you might. One of the things that I do appreciate that happens in some of the larger cities is that, and I'm talking about those cities that were destination cities, St. Louis, Chicago, Detroit, Pittsburgh, other cities that were destinations for individuals who came from the South during the years, those incredible years of the Great Migration. Well, what is particularly significant that over the years, the newspapers in those communities reflected individuals who came from those smaller communities in the rural South. And this is what is so wonderful about the series of 8 volumes by Marlene Garrett Bransom. As I said, just because you may not think that, well, my folks are not in Pittsburgh and I don't have roots there, don't think that you won't be interested. Over the years, the death notices that began to appear in the Pittsburgh Courier began to reflect the communities from which the individuals who came and located to the area originated. And you never know. In some cases, there just might be a unique death listing that could open some doors for you. Now, as I said, 8 volumes, that's an awesome task. What an incredible labor of love. Let me just give you an overview, and I am going to provide a link to Claassen Press for you. I wanted to just give you an idea of the value of this collection. The very first volume represents individuals who lived, obviously, since this was certainly in the earlier days of the publication, it reflected the individuals who lived in the communities in and around Pittsburgh and in small towns in southwestern Pennsylvania. And volume 1 covers the periods 1911, March 1911 through December 1912. So about 1.5 years, almost 2 years worth of data. Suddenly, by the time Miss Bransom got to volume 2, there was a different focus. Although they all appeared in the same Pittsburgh Courier, the deaths that were listed covered a wider geographic area. Volume 2 consists consisted of deaths that encompassed over 100 small towns and cities across the United States. For example, yes, there were Southwest Pennsylvania towns, but suddenly in this Pennsylvania, this Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania publication, here were deaths that were being listed from Ohio, from towns in Ohio such as Bridgeport, Canton, Cincinnati, Chillicothe, Cleveland, Dayton, other towns, Youngstown, Zanesville, and so much more. North Carolina, there were deaths that were listed reflecting small towns such as Burlington, Edenton, Hartford, Kinston, Wilmington, and at the same time, there were even larger cities, Fayetteville, Greensboro, Rocky Mount, Winston-Salem, and more. So again, as you can see, a lot of communities were reflected there. There were deaths in the same volume, too, from Hackensack, New Jersey, Jersey City, New Brunswick, Orange and Patterson. Amazing. New Yorkers might be interested to see some of the deaths that were listed from Brooklyn, from Buffalo, from Albany, Syracuse, Rochester, Yonkers. So all over the place. Kentucky was represented in this journal, not just Lexington and Louisville, but other towns as well. Even there were deaths from Georgia in volume two. Albany, Augusta, Elberton, New Albany, just on and on and on. By the time you get to volume 8, and we're still talking about the series, remember the series is called Early African American Deaths from the Pittsburgh Courier. Well, by the time you get to volume 8, which covers most of 1930, you had deaths and obituaries from more than 35 states. That's a pretty broad listing of deaths and obituaries. Now, a majority of the deaths by the time you get to volume 8 are from Massachusetts, Michigan, New York, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and even Washington, D.C. What a wonderful exercise in terms of discipline, in terms of what she did to put together this massive compilation. And you hear me say it all the time. I'm saying it again. This is a model to follow. There are many cities that have produced African American newspapers over the past century, century and a half. And if you're looking for a project, a compilation of death records or death notices such as this that spans several decades, this would be a wonderful undertaking. But it must be pointed out that clearly the work that she put into this is not a quick and dirty kind of project. This is a labor of love that can take you on a fascinating journey, but this becomes one of those tools. Once it's actually completed, it becomes one of those tools that can be used by so many researchers for generations. So, you know, I just encourage, you know, we need to know what others are doing. And I really think that Ms. Bransom really needs to be congratulated and honored, and her work needs to be appreciated. You know, there are a lot of people out there who are writing, quote unquote, and publishing, and they're throwing out 3, 4, 5 publications a year. Well, what oftentimes they're doing, they're just copying and pasting and compiling and putting together things and putting together things that have just links to this and links to that and putting them online. But this is something that required time. She had to actually read these newspapers. She had to comb through them and then had to index them and had to really realize the value to her audience. And this is not something that's quick and dirty and thrown online. This is something that she really put some time and energy. I was surprised when I saw it that the publication date for these 8 journals is fairly recent. We're talking about 2012 and 2011 copyright dates. So this is something that obviously she's been working on for a very, very long time, but they're all being released now together as a full set. amazing work. I'm hoping that her work continues. I can certainly see the value of continue the work through other decades throughout the 20th century, and just hope that certainly she does continue it. Truly, truly amazing, and she should truly be applauded for that. I'm going to also put a link for you on the podcast website so you can go visit, order some of her books, order, you know, if you're part of an organization or a library or any type of research facility, order the full set. This is certainly something to have. I was very excited when I saw it, when someone shared it, and it was just one of those things. Greatly appreciated, and congratulations to the compiler. By the way, do you like a mystery? Well, this is something that's kind of interesting. You know, I like blogs. I love reading blogs. I enjoy going on a research journey that individuals have shared. When they tell their story, they tell their story about how they found something. They tell the story about their reaction to things that they have found, or some of the insights that they have been able to glean from the research projects that they are undertaking. Well, I enjoy also blogs when people present a problem and ask for others to participate. I saw a really neat post, actually, that was shared, and it's one of those things that I just say, hey, do you like a mystery? Well, a fellow blogger has written an article about his sort of brick wall. He's researching his wife's family and is asking others to assist with any thoughts, any ideas on how to find additional information. The blog itself is called Genealogics, and it rests on a WordPress blog. It's genealogics.wordpress.com, and the blog owner is someone called Matthew. Now, I will say one thing. I love blogs. I love the people that I've met who have written blogs. I've never met this particular blogger, but I had a hard time figuring out what Matthew's whole name is, and I still don't know it. But Matthew, you write extremely well, and I have enjoyed so many of your articles. So I hope you're listening out there. But I encourage you as listeners and as readers, as researchers, this is the kind of thing that sometimes it's useful because it gives us sometimes some thoughts in terms of our own personal brick walls. He has shared his effort to document his wife's family, Mamie Rice in particular, one of the ancestors of the family. This is a woman who was born in South Carolina in the 1870s, died in Arkansas in Conway County in the 1940s, I believe. Anyway, it's a wonderful blog, wonderful article, and well documented. You see the documents in which he has found Mamie Rice. You see the census records. You see even other documents that he's found. And, of course, one would assume, oh, that's logical. Get the death certificate to find out more about her and her origins. And he has a copy of the death certificate, one of those certificates that we all hate to get. You get to the certificate, it's well documented, the information on the deceased, where they died, where they buried, etc., etc., place of birth, and then parents, unknown. Oh my gosh, you know your heart sinks when you get something that you're hoping to find, and then you see it, unknown. My goodness, wow. So he's sharing his challenge with fellow readers, and I'm going to put a link to his blog and take a look, respond to him. You know, one thing about blogging, I will say, I have met incredible individuals who are writers, who are incredibly gifted in telling their story. And I've come to appreciate people I never would have met. Even if I had gone to a conference and they were at that same conference, more than likely, I would just say, hi, how are you? Smile and keep going and go sit down and take a seat. But blogging introduces you to other researchers because you can see what they feel. They're putting it out there on paper. They're sharing their journey. They're sharing their story with you. And of course, that's why I always encourage people to consider using blogging as a platform. You know, off and on for over 40 years, I have always been intrigued by journals and writing And blogging, of course, is nothing but an extension of that same undertaking, that effort now that many people, or many of us, started as children, taking the pen or pencil to paper and telling our story. How many of us, when we were in school, were inspired, of course, and saddened when we read the diary of Anne Frank. But we also realized here was a young girl writing down what was happening to her during the terrible years of World War II and of a family that had to live in hiding. And how many of you wish that, oh, I wish my own ancestors had left me diaries and letters and journals? Well, you know, this is kind of a way of doing that, blogging is. And you don't have to make it sort of a day-to-day recording of what you've done. I really don't care that you did your laundry today or need to do it, but I do care about what you think about your projects. And reading a blog such as Genealogics, it's one of those things that reminds me, yep, this is why I do what I do. I would never have certainly been aware of this individual as a writer, as a researcher, as a fellow documentarian, so to speak. But thankfully, through not just the fact that the blog is out there, but seeing the right link that I happened to see on Twitter and saying, wow, what a great story. There's something here that can be read and appreciated. I appreciate the story also because it's an Arkansas-based story with South Carolina origins. Anyway, I just want to encourage you all to take a look at it. It's well written. Read some of the other articles as well on the blog. Great blog, good mystery to solve. And Matthew, I hope that you can find out more about Mamie Rice. Good story. And I just thought I would share and pass it on to you as well. I mentioned something earlier about the Emancipation. Well, I did have a chance to get a glimpse of the Emancipation Proclamation at a press conference. And, you know, yes, I know that the Emancipation itself, as I said, the document itself did not truly bring freedom to many, many people. But it is one of those documents that is a symbol. Just as we know that there were many things that didn't happen in our nation simply because we declared our independence from the British in the 1700s, but it took years to evolve. And if I may borrow the words of a gentleman I was listening to yesterday, the words in the Constitution that say, and that continue to evolve in order to form a more perfect union. Well, certainly I see this particular document as part of that effort to form a more perfect union. That is why we have a Congress. That's why we have legislators who struggle, and indeed are struggling as we speak, as we hopefully are not going towards a fiscal cliff, but they are struggling towards also finding a more perfect union. Well, the Emancipation Proclamation as a document was one of those documents in our history, and that represent that incredible journey that we have been on for over 200 years to form that more perfect union, and that we must appreciate the fact that this is a document that addressed our status. The very first document of freedom, the Declaration of Independence, and the records that emerged, as we know, many of those who share African ancestry in this country, it was declaring us to be 3/5 of a human being. Well, as we have evolved to form that better union, certainly this is what makes honoring the fact that this document was written by the head of state during a time of turmoil. Maybe it wasn't written from his heart, but it was written, and it did certainly affect many. So as a result, I simply say, you know what, this is something we need to think about. And also, many people don't realize that in September of 1862, there was a preliminary Emancipation Proclamation that was written. And President Lincoln gave the states that were to be affected in the South, where individuals were being held, he gave them 100 days to respond. And of course, there wasn't a response. There was a war going on. But the word certainly via telegraph, via other underground networks of communication. The word had reached many enslaved populations that they were soon to be able to leave their state of bondage. Well, it's also important to understand that when places where people were still held in bondage, that this document was read to them. This document was read in Harrison County, Texas. General Granger read it there to the Confederates still holding people in bondage. He read it there first before he even made it to Galveston. And we know the people in Galveston did not hear of their freedom until June of 1865. What, 2.5 years after freedom or after this proclamation had been written. But it is still something that does have historical merit. It certainly is something that we do want to understand. And also, you know how we're in church on January 31st, many of us are, and many who go to those watch night services. Well, you know, this is one of those traditions that has its origin based on this particular document. It was known throughout the South. It was going to be considered effective January the 1st, 1863, which is why we're at the sesquicentennial commemoration. Well, many people in many places in the South were praying. They were saying, can we live to see this day? Can we live to see January 1st to actually breathe free air officially? And throughout many communities, there were prayer services that began, and that was the very first watch night. I do know that some of us have been discussing in the genealogy community, perhaps maybe we will have our own watch night commemoration on our own blogs and web pages and our own social network communities that, and I'm just sharing this also sort of with you. Perhaps if you just take a minute out of your day, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, a half an hour, on December 31st of this year to write a piece, your own watch night piece, to share your feelings about what happened 150 years ago to our ancestors. We are going to have our own watch night online celebration. It won't be live. I know many of you are going to be at parties. Some of you actually will be in church. I appreciate that too. But I know many of you will be with family, with loved ones. Many of you are going to be out partying, and some of you are going to be in your pajamas but watching the ball fall in Times Square, as I have done many, many times. But I do encourage you, let's have our own watch night on January 31st. It doesn't have to be real time, but write a piece on your blog and share your family freedom story or your something pertaining to those ancestors who were officially enslaved and then suddenly at the stroke of midnight, whether officially or unofficially, who were at least certainly symbolically emancipated on January 1st, 1863. Start looking around. I think we're going to see some interesting blogs popping up, I hope, next week on New Year's Eve. And by the way, for those of you who particularly want to document your family story and who like to look at the story in terms of what happened to the ancestors in a particular period of time, it is important to take a look at and to try and study as much as you can what happened to the families that were affected by the proclamation, the families that were suddenly encountering freedom for the first time. It's important to try and understand what was happening in the region where your ancestors lived to those newly freed slaves. There were a lot of obstacles that they would have in terms of finding certainly peace and happiness and an opportunity to be on their way to freedom. And I encourage you to listen to last night's Bernie Spinnett show on Blog Talk Radio. Her guest was Judy Russell, the legal genealogist, and it was a powerful show, very poignant show, very much illustrative of the many, many, many things that happened to individuals once their families were freed, and how many of them children were certainly still being snatched from their parents, although now free. There was that perspective that many were incompetent as newly freed people to care for their children and were suddenly apprenticed, which was the legal term, to the very same people who had enslaved them. This was a system that was approved and sanctioned in many, many states. And suddenly, the former landowners who had lost their free labor from their officially enslaved population were re-enslaving children and still able to exploit for at least 2 to 3 years, and many records in the Freedmen's Bureau that pour out some of these incidents where so many families were still having such an uphill battle in terms of negotiating freedom. It took several years, even appealing to various governors, appealing to Washington, to allow these individuals to live intact as families. Poignant show last night, as I said, it was on Blog Talk Radio, Bernice Bennett's show, Research at the National Archives and Beyond. And definitely listen to it. I'll put a link for you to hear it. Judy Russell, the legal genealogist, really discussed the name-rich records that can be found for family historians and just the legal issues that faced so many people. Also, in addition to that, she also addressed in that show the various places within court records one can find the family before freedom, where one can find the family when they were enslaved. We know certainly being categorized as property, but she talks about how often that property appeared in records, not just in a will when someone was willing their slaves to their children, but how often slaves were confiscated because of a debt. Slaves were traded. Slaves were given as gifts. Slaves were used to for a second mortgage. Slaves were rented. Slaves were hired out. The many categories in which ancestors' names can be found even before freedom. Great show last night. I urge you to certainly tune in and listen. Anyway, I have gone on and on and on. Time goes by so quickly. I do thank you for taking out time of your day. I thank you for taking time out in this holiday season. Enjoy the season, certainly. Enjoy, embrace those smiles, capture those smiles, send some cards to a friend, perhaps that you haven't heard from in a long time, and bring a smile to also an elder as well as the young. Have a Merry Christmas, everyone. And in between, do what you always do. Keep researching, keep documenting, and keep sharing what you find. Merry Christmas. Bye-bye.